Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable.
Hey, everybody. This is Charlie from Exploration Live, the podcast. You know, we are doing something a little bit differently this week because Natalie and I are separate. In the past, when we've been separate, we've recorded on Zoom, which we haven't loved just because it's logistically complicated and the tech is sometimes hard to work. Or we've like recorded a bunch in a week leading up, but we just didn't have time to do that this week. So this week we're doing something that kind of in line with our spirit is textbook definition, like experimental, which is that we are going to be recording the podcast separately. So I have some ideas I've written. Natalie has some of hers. She sent me hers. I'm going to be kind of looking at hers, telling them to you guys, and then like kind of making some kind of guesses as to what she might be saying. And then she'll kind of on her end will explicate and also vice versa. I hope that makes sense. It's interesting to record alone. I'm finding that I'm really missing Natalie. And it's a really different experience to be kind of like solitary in my little space. Partially because like you kind of abdicate a little bit of responsibility when you're with someone else. Like you don't have, it's strange now having like sole dominion over like what I record and what I say, right? Like I keep finding myself even now wanting to start over and be like, this wasn't good enough, right? Because it's just me, it's just my time. But I ultimately don't, I don't think that's the right impulse to follow. I think I have to kind of be truthful and move forward in the spirit of the podcast and in the spirit of Natalie as well and our kind of partnership together. I hope that all sounds okay. I'm excited to do this and I like my ideas. I wonder what Natalie's doing right now. I think it's kind of fun to imagine. I bet you she's watching an amazing video on her phone. Could be anything.
Hi, everyone. This is so interesting because I'm literally all alone and not with Charlie. But that's because, I'm eating a candy. Are you guys going to be upset that I'm eating a candy? Can that be okay? If you're listening and I'm eating a candy and you don't like that, can that just be okay right now? Because what if I tell you this? The amount that I want the candy is so much. Like, I'm not doing it for no reason, and it's only serving me, obviously, but it's not because I only kind of want something. It's because I want something so badly. That's why I'm putting you guys at risk of hearing something annoying. And eventually, as we keep recording, the candy will disappear slowly and become something that's inside my stomach, and then you'll never hear it again. So, okay, just try and know that. Anyways, I'm not with Charlie right now because he is in LA and I have my own things going on, aka Yom Kippur is about to happen. We're actually in a race against the clock for me to start Yom Kippur. Anyways, so we're doing something crazy, which is that we're doing our lists separately, privately, and obviously that's scary, but it's an opportunity to learn and grow. And we have each other's lists, so we're going to guess each other's, read each other's list, guess what each other means, probably get them right, some of it, probably discover new things anyways, and then do our own. Okay, so first I'm going to do, I'm just going to get rid of the candy. If you like sensory stuff, listen, but if you don't, just skip forward like 15 seconds. Okay. So this is Charlie's first idea. Fancy house Listerine. This is my guess. While Charlie was in LA, he went to a fancy house, like someone's house that was really nice, something like that. And while he was there, he found in their bathroom Listerine that was elevated, like not just like the Listerine brand, maybe like a different brand, like of Listerine with like a special label or something. And maybe he's thinking like, wow, like at every single level, something can be fancy. Like even a Listerine, even a mouthwash can be something that's so fancy. Or it's something like this. He went to a fancy house that was so beautiful. And in that fancy house, sitting there was just a Listerine. And it's like, you can't run from Listerine. Like even at the highest level of fanciness, someone's going to be using Listerine because that's the product. Like that's the go-to, like Vaseline. Like you're not using something fancier than Vaseline. Like you're using what works. Okay, that's my guess.
Okay, my first one is fancy house Listerine. And this is one I put in, and I wrote it in a way where I was like, I actually don't know if Natalie's going to get it. But it's kind of fun to see, like, give like a vague prompt and see where she goes with it. And maybe she'll get it exactly. The thing with this is I was in a really fancy house recently, and it was the kind of house where it's like every quotidian object found a way of like wrapping itself in luxury, right? Like it was like, oh, you have like really fancy toothpaste, you have a really fancy soap dispenser, all your soaps are really expensive, like every, like you have a tissue box that I know costs a lot of money, you have like, and even things that don't cost money are like classed, right? Like they had like Dr. Bronner's toothpaste, right? Which is not so expensive, but within the context of the house, which was like fancy, but like kind of crunchy granola fancy, like that kind. It was really tasteful. It was really gorgeous. It was like, oh, this is deliberate. Like you're not just getting the like fanciest, you know, you're not just getting like the simplest version of it. You're like getting, everything has the mark of like aesthetic sensibility and taste, right? Which in itself is class because it's like, who the fuck has time for all that? It was a beautiful house to be in. Obviously, it's like a thing that is easy to aspire to. And at times in my life, I really have aspired to it. Though also find it like that aspiration can be so exhausting. Because you're like, God, I have to choose like beautiful forks. God, like, oh, like Jesus, my fucking napkins have to be pretty. Come on, like, give me a break. Like, how much time do you have in your life to do that? Like, I'm just going to get napkins. And I when people do that, I'm like, I don't know how, because maybe it's like other people just have taste and can access it faster. Whereas I'm like, okay, I've been wanting to buy beautiful glasses for such a long time, like drinking glasses. And I'm like, I can't do it. Like, I guess it's like, I've seen ones that I really like, but they're too expensive. And then absent that, I'm like, okay, I could find them, but I don't see them so often. They don't come up so often. And in my searches, I haven't found anything that's both in my price range and I like. And so it's like, I have like a bunch of mismatched jars and kind of cloudy glasses that are all mismatched and they're not so pretty. And that's just one thing. I mean, it took me, I think I talked about this on the podcast. It took me like a year and a half to find a laundry basket I liked. And then I found one and I really liked it, which validated the whole enterprise. Fancy house Listerine, though, was that there was this one thing in this person's house where they just had like Listerine, like a normal bottle of Listerine. And it was actually so jarring to see something that was not marked by luxury. Like I was like, oh, that's the one I have. And that's the one that like is kind of an easy one to get. Like you're not getting like a fancy Listerine brand. Or often I find like a way that people will wrap things in luxury or aesthetic sensibility, whatever, in their house is they'll like decant it, right? And I was like, you actually could get like a mouthwash dispenser pretty easily, right? Like, and if you could get a fun vintage one and have like little, like, I don't know, paper cups or something, or like a little like brass cup that you put it in and rinse out every time you use it, which, by the way, to that person, here's a free idea. It's pretty cool, and I feel like you could actually get that pretty quickly. But it was just jarring to see, right? To be like, oh my god, like here's just this like kind of brand that is so like out of place and is so like jarring. It's like, this is like all of a sudden I'm in Duane Reade, and you know, of course most people have many of those kinds of things in their house, but to see a house without it and then to see this, it's like, oh, I do see like what this does and what it's like to live without it. Like, it kind of accented to me or underscored to me, like, how that experience can be jarring and what that does to live, like, around, like, kind of crass consumer brands as opposed to, like, elegant consumer brands that are, like, marketing themselves towards, like, upper middle class yuppies, whatever.
Salt is rocks. Salt is rocks, I basically think, is the idea where it's like salt, like when it comes down to it, like at the end of the day, it's rocks. And the fact that we can't live without it, it's like you can't live without like shaved rock on your food, basically. And like that's random. And like, why does it have such a chokehold on you? Like, if the fact of it is, like, it's just like literally like salt. Like, I'm sorry, it's just literally like rocks. Okay. That one, wait, let me really try and get inside Charlie's head because I'm not really feeling that. Salt is rocks. I mean, it really just says it all. Like, salt is rocks. And maybe this would be one of the ones where we would go, enough said. You know what I mean?
Okay, here's my next one. Salt is rocks. I feel pretty sure Natalie's going to get this one. I'm feeling good about it. Salt is rocks is a continuation on lights are hot and ice cream is food. Salt is rocks is just like part of this series about like things having physical properties that like sort of surprise us. Or like things having physical properties beyond exactly what we expect beyond their like normal use, right? So salt is rocks comes up when like anything where you use salt to kind of whatever, for its physical property, which happens, I think, the times I've seen that are, like, people will use salt to clean cast iron sometimes because it's abrasive. Or people will use salt sometimes, which I think is cool. Like, it's an important component of, like, when you're using, like, a mortar and pestle, right? Like, if you're making, like, a garlic paste, you can put salt in it. And, like, that'll help, like, because when you're mixing it up, it'll, like, kind of help. I want to say macerate the garlic, but I think that means chew. But like, you know, mash up, I guess, the garlic. And then also there's all these fancy salts that are specifically like they're only different because of their like physical shape, right? It's like salt is salt. I think, I'm actually not sure, but I think salt is just salt. And so it's like, why does like Maldon sea salt taste different than like kosher salt? And it's like, okay, maybe it is different. Someone's gonna be like, no, stupid, of course they're different, but I don't know if they are. And if they aren't different, then it really is just the shape. But then maybe that also has some physical property as well, where it's like, okay, actually, if this is shaped differently, like it sits and like is experienced differently by your tongue. Here's what I'm wondering about the differences between, I'm curious to see, like, absent each other's influence, like what Natalie and I do differently. Like, I wonder how, like, if this will kind of, foreground the ways that we have different approaches. And then, like, it'll make it clear, like, what happens when we bring those approaches together. All right.
Okay. What next? Let's see. This is Charlie's idea about feeling like a drawing. Wow. Feeling like a drawing. Well, right off the bat, a couple things come to mind. First of all, the SpongeBob episode where he is against the pencil or can erase himself or can't. I wasn't exactly like alternative enough as a kid to be into SpongeBob. I was a little more, I was just a little more basic, honestly. Like, I was into, you know, Disney stuff, and I always found cartoons to be like a little edgy, which like obviously I look back and I'm like, the people who like SpongeBob are like really, really cool and smart. But I did like it, but I just wasn't that into it. But anyways, you know, when he has like a pencil for like a friend or like the pencil. Oh, Doodle Bob. I Googled it. Whatever. Anyways, that's something it makes me think of. It also makes me think of. Now, this is going to be tricky because I'm not really sure what like I'm talking about. And this is where I would really need Charlie's help. But like, feeling like a painting makes me think about those, feeling like a drawing, sorry, makes me think about those paintings that are like from like a certain time, and it's these like pale kind of people, and like the women have like these like kind of like They've got like hips, and they usually have like a little like lower stomach area, very small, but still there. And then they have these boobs, and then they have, maybe it's like Botticelli that time. You know what? I'm just going to look this up. Botticelli. Like, what am I talking about? Okay. Died in 1510 in Italy. Like, that literally tells me nothing. Oh, Renaissance. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, Renaissance paintings, women naked. That's what I'm Googling. So they don't want to show it to me because I feel like they think I'm going to jack off. Yeah, this is what I'm talking about. So this just makes me think of like the first time I saw these, I was like, yeah, that's pretty much what I look like. And I felt like a painting in those ways, except, and this is a major but, and I've actually been meaning to bring this up on the podcast, like these, the way they're drawing these people, like so, they really capture something about the stomach that is often true, you know, like that you don't always see in a painting. Like they just capture something about it, you know, and it's in all its realness. And then an ass too, like sometimes the ass will kind of like go in at the bottom and I'm like, yeah, okay, totally. But then for all their like realness, the boobs are only ever these kind of like floating orbs that are just like floating on the body, like as if they're in water. And I know that some people have that. And I seriously, major shout out. And there's no good or bad, but I just am like, what? I just feel like I'm like, huh, these all going together. Sorry, I'm like really looking at them now. I'm like, you know, where are the kind of low boobs? That's what I'm wondering about. Which era? So if Renaissance had like kind of soft bodies but floating boobs, who had low boobs? Who had low boobs era of painting? This is going to be nothing. Who had low boobs era of painting? I don't even want to tell you guys what came up. Oh, how the representation of boobs has changed through art. All right, I'm literally never going to read that. I just exited out like as a gift to myself. I'm like, don't even worry about it, girl. Okay, let's get back to it. So what do I think Charlie meant by that? Gosh. Something like a drawing. If I could get inside of Charlie's head, I would say feeling like the word drawing is tripping me up because I'm like, it's not a painting. It's not like he's in some scenic place. Maybe it's about feeling flat, like feeling two-dimensional, like when you're just like, that sounds like Charlie, right? Okay, that's my guess for that one.
Okay, my next one is feeling like a drawing. This is just the thing of sometimes you feel like a drawing or you see a drawing and you're like, wow, that's me, legit. Like, and it just works like so well and it's actually kind of crazy. as an experience. And it's very like, this is very like millennial BuzzFeed of me, like literally it me. But, like, I mean, do you guys remember Rage comics? Like, sometimes you'd see a Rage comic. They're, like, those Reddit-like faces. It's hard to explain if you don't know. They were just these, like, cartoons, and they use these, like, kind of stock faces. And sometimes you would see them, and you'd be like, that is seriously so me. Oh, my God. Like, I connect to that so much, right? And all the time, like, you'll see a little cartoon, and you're like, oh, my God. That is like the shape of, that really feels like the shape of my soul, or it feels like it captures a feeling or experience so well. Which I guess I thought it was interesting because it's like almost like metaphysical about like, not metaphysical, but it's like about our like self-image and how it can be like really revealing like, oh, we see ourselves in this way that is like actually like so removed from how we actually look, right? Like there's a meme that was going around that was like, I can't remember what the actual creature was in it, but it was like a tiny cute little worm or something. No, it was probably like a tiny cute little like bunny rabbit. And it was like, this is, and the caption was like, this is me. When you're being mean to me, this is who you're being mean to. And it's like a tiny little bunny rabbit. And you see that and you're like, oh my God, I feel like that sometimes. I kind of want to hear what Natalie has to say about this. Because I'm like, yeah, okay, so you feel like a bunny rabbit. All right. What do we kind of do with that? Well, here's what I'll say what we do with that. I think it's interesting, like the shapes of our spirits and our souls. And it's very revealing. And it's a powerful moment of identification, right? Like that, I actually think it's kind of transcendent. There's something being transcended when you connect with a non-human form and identify yourself in a non-human form. That was very powerful in millennial culture. It me. Like, oh my God, it me, right? And it still happens. I think that always has happened, but like, you know, to name it like that. All right, I'm interested in this. I don't feel like I've fully gotten there, but I feel like good for now.
Next up, even Wordle ends. Oh my God. Okay, so what I think this is like, there was a time when like Wordle was like everywhere. I mean, it was everything. It was, you couldn't go two steps without hearing about Wordle. And in that time, it felt so big. It felt like this is never going to end, right? It felt like high school is forever, you know? Wordle is for always. Like, some things are just, like, too big to fail. But I think what Charlie's getting at here is, like, even Wordle, even something as ubiquitous as Wordle was, is going to end. And it did, at least as a non-player, it did. And sometimes you do something huge, you know, a big cultural moment, and then you continue to have a private relationship with it, and it takes on a totally different meaning. I have that with the game 2048. I don't know if any of you played that, but 2048 is an amazing game. I think it's just 2048.com is how you go to it. 2048, sorry. It's actually 2048.ninja, so that's my bad. But basically, wow, I just went to the 2048 website and there's an ad for Saturday Night Live on the side to stream it on Peacock. So I guess like 2048 must be doing pretty well, like if Peacock is paying for ad space. I'm sorry, I'm interacting with my laptop too much, but you guys get it. It's like my first time doing this by myself, so... Anyways, so 2048 was huge in like 2017, 2018 maybe, and I will occasionally play it now. Still, I have a totally solitary relationship with it. Like, I never bring it up to anyone. There's no community around it. It's really just me and the game, and I often win, and when I'm playing it, it usually means I'm also watching TV, and... I'm trying to do less two things at once. But how lame is that? That's like, I'm trying not to play 2048 when I watch TV. Like, do you have to try so hard with every fucking thing you do? Like, why don't you just watch TV and play 20? Like, what? So because why? Because why? Like, does everything need to be something you like grow out or have some metric of getting better on? Like, no, just like, you don't need to watch TV better. Just play your... But I think the thing is that I'm like, it's too much stim. Like, I'm trying to be more like a one thing at a time type of girl. But why? But I know why, actually. Because I think it's nicer. If anyone knows what slow maxing is, would you tell me? Because I saw a TikTok about it once. And now I actually just looked it up and it's right here. I was going to say I can't find anything about it online, but I just found it. Okay. I like it. I like this idea, but I don't want to talk about it.
All right, I want to say something. And this is honestly genuine and true, but something changed in my life where I, and Natalie, can I speak for you as well here?
Right.
That I've been going to see a lot more theater, and I'm having an amazing time doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of off my radar for a while, and I've been having so much fun. And so what a treat that we are being basically sponsored by TodayTix, which is a fabulous way to get tickets to shows, just kind of classic style, but also you can get rush tickets on TodayTix, cheaper tickets. It's just a really fun night out with your friends. Kind of you can do like high-end expensive, like we're going to go see a big, brilliant Broadway show, whatever. Or you can do like kind of a little weird experimental off Broadway. Like they kind of have it all. Mm. It's fabulous. It's fun. There's nothing better. Something about theater. It's so fun to like see a show. And then later you walk out and you get to be like, so. Like,
right.
Whether it's good or bad or a mix, whatever. Like who's like, it's just a rich, fun thing to talk about.
And it's a great present
It's a great
then
present.
Then you get to experience something with the other person.
Yes, exactly.
And make a memory. Mm-hmm. And it's not just like,
yeah,
you know, a hat or whatever.
That's right.
They've got tickets to shows on Broadway and the West End and in other cities across the country and around the world. And you can book a show in advance or, this is key, be spontaneous and check out what's on for tonight.
What did we see recently? You saw Wicked.
I saw Wicked.
I'm about
that
to see
was
Wicked.
Amazing. Yeah. And
oh my God, I've actually seen so much. I've seen a lot of Sondheim, famously.
Great.
Recently.
List them.
I saw, last year saw Into the Woods. More recently, I saw Sweeney Todd,
mm-hmm.
which I loved.
TodayTix gives you access to exclusive pre-sales, lotteries, and specially priced rush tickets.
Mm-hmm. So go to todaytix.com/exploration and use promo code exploration to get $20 off your first TodayTix purchase. That's promo code exploration at todaytix.com/exploration. todaytix.com/exploration. You know what? I think you guys are going to really use this one. $20 off a ticket is kind of awesome. And that's the price basically of like you get a drink or two before the show. How fabulous is that? So check it out.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, here's my last one, which is Even Wordle Ends. And Even Wordle Ends is the thing of, like, I remember being, like, doing Wordle, and I did it really consistently for a long time. I think I had a streak of doing it for, like, maybe, and this is embarrassing, like, maybe, like, 100 days, right? Like months and months I would do it every single day, you know, would always get it. I guess that's not so crazy, but, like, you know. And I remember in that time period being like, wow, I wonder when I'm going to not, like, I guess at some point in my life, I'm going to stop doing Wordle. And like that makes sense. And me doing Wordle every day now makes sense. But like, what's that transition going to be like, right? Where it's like, this is so much part of my life right now. And then I can't imagine the thing of like it fading away, like it sort of like becoming less important to me or becoming less like part of my routine. Like that felt so like hard to understand. And that reminds me of the process of like a breakup where you're like, I know that I can envision this person not being in my life. And I know my life now with them, but like, I know the process of like getting from there is like completely unfathomable. Like, how do you like I remember life without them and I know life with them, but like how, like that transition is like so surreal and impossible as to be like, I mean, just impossibly painful. It's not so painful with Wordle. And again, with these things of like any kind of find like any time in your life where you're like, I wonder what will happen in the future. I wonder how the future will happen. And then the future does happen and you're kind of like, oh, all right. Like it's kind of boring, right? I think I've talked about this on the podcast, but the experience of like many possible futures folding into one and you're kind of like, okay, it's that one. Like I remember feeling that way about like, I wonder where I'm going to go to college. And then I like went to college and was like, okay, here, like, right. Like it was so much more exciting to think about it as like, wow, it could be one of these 20 places. And I'm imagining all the exciting various things about all these places. Right. And then you choose one and it's like, oh, this doesn't have all those exciting things. This is just like one normal place. Or like, I wonder where I'm going to move. Like when you're moving, you're like, I wonder what my next apartment is going to be like. And you're excited because you're like, it could be really big. Maybe it'll have gorgeous light or be in a really cool location or it'll have like nice amenities or like da 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 da. And then the actual reality is quotidian and boring. And you're like, okay, it doesn't have all those things. It has one thing and that's cool. Or like whatever. Same thing. I remember the same thing being like, as a teenager being like, I wonder who my first boyfriend will be. And imagining like the great big world of like, you know, it could be all of these incredible, amazing things. And instead it's like nice and normal. And you're like, okay, this is a person. I guess I don't want to reveal too much. So it's the same process of like when Wordle ends. Oh, and when the way Wordle ended for me is that I just forgot to do it one day. And then because I didn't have the streak, it stopped mattering. And then now I do it like if I'm bored, if I remember to, and I'm bored and I'm on my phone, period. Like it's, and right. Like that's such a, it was actually like the way it happened was like, all right, like that's fine. Okay. I'm going to read some of Natalie's ideas. And I'm actually looking at these now for the first time, kind of again in spirit. We're doing like, you know, we have the exploration because this is exploratory in its form and it's also live. And then I'm reacting live and exploring her ideas live. Her first one is Floater's Reminder. Huh. Which I'm sort of curious about because that doesn't feel like I so understand what that is. Yeah, here's my guess. Floaters, like, I think this is kind of like one of the things. It's like the quicksand thing, like John Mulaney's bit about quicksand, where it's like when you're a kid, you really think that quicksand is going to be a huge part of your life, and it turns out it's not. Floaters, I'm reading as like the things in your like eye vision, those like weird little like kind of ghostly forms that like drift across your vision. And I feel like the reminder element here is that those used to be a really big part of life, but or like that was a big part of your world, because I guess maybe when you're a kid, you're like that disjuncture of like, okay, you're telling me that I'm seeing stuff, but there's actually like I'm supposed to see the world, but there's this thing that I'm seeing that's like really, really not in line with what you guys are telling me. Like I'm seeing these weird ghostly forms all the time. What's going on? And then maybe as an adult, you kind of integrate that more and you're like, yeah. Like, you know, it's sort of a thing of the wonder of the world kind of like being lost to you a little bit. Or like you're integrating like a lot of the weird things about the world, which I know actually Natalie like engages with a lot, because that's like a big feature of being like with young children, because she's like a nanny, right? And so people are always, the kids she works with are always asking her questions that are like interrogating the world like that. And in forcing you to kind of confront things that like you would otherwise maybe take for granted. So I wonder if like that's like, and that's a guess. Maybe that, it's funny to go off about that and it's like, no, that's not what it was at all. All right.
Okay, Floater's Reminder. That's this idea that I have that, I don't know if Charlie's going to get this, but I'm actually having the sense that I've said this to him before, which I know is classic feeling that we have on the podcast a lot, but now I can't even check with him, whatever. But I have these floaters in my eye. Maybe some of you have them. Like, I know that I do, my mom does, but they're like little, like, actually maybe everyone has them, but some people have them worse. But it's like a little string of like clear kind of like stuff, like cells maybe. I don't know. They're not actually cells, but like they look kind of like a string of like cells or something. And they just like, basically they are everywhere you look, and it's like sometimes you don't really notice them, but they're kind of always in the corner of my eye. I'm like looking around right now to test it, but they're especially, you can especially see them when you look at bright light, or it's like a bright day out, you look at like a clear background, like if you look up to the sky and it's just all blue, like you're gonna see your floaters. And they kind of like you go to, oh my god, I've definitely talked this on the podcast before, I'm so embarrassed, but whatever. It's like you go to like look at, chase them kind of, but they move with your eye. And the Floater's Reminder is basically this thing that like, I used to have this idea that like, I was like in like high school or something. I was like, okay, I'm going to have the, I was upset that I had the floaters, 'cause I was like, shit, like they're kind of annoying and they're going to be in my eye for the rest of my life. And like, they're probably only going to get worse. But then I was like, wait, what if every time I see the floaters, I use it as a reminder of something, like that I should like be grateful or something. I don't think it was that in high school, but it was something about like trying to be happy or something, like use the floaters to remind me, whatever. But I don't know what it was. But now every time I see the floaters, I remember the idea that they're supposed to be a reminder for something. Not supposed to be, that I was going to use them as a reminder for something, but I don't remember what it was. So it's just kind of like, oh, there's a floater, it's like in my eye, like remember the idea about remembering something, and then it's gone. So it's like interesting. Or maybe you guys are thinking, no, it's not, which would be so valid. But it's kind of like, it's like having like a ribbon around your finger, you know, in olden times, they would like do that to remember something. But then it's like you just live your life with the ribbon around your finger, or like when you get like an alert on your calendar, it just says like reminder, but you forgot to write what the thing is and you're like, huh? Reminder of what? So I don't know. But now I'm kind of like, honestly, like no reminders, like just live. That's my new thing. I'm like the same thing as like the, like I'm like, I shouldn't play 2048 and do the TV at the same time. It's like, oh, every time I see the floater, I need to remember, like, no light. That's like life hack vibe. You know what I mean? Like, how about you just have floaters in your eyes and sometimes you're looking at stuff and sometimes you see them and just, okay, just enough, right? With trying to just do everything. It's like easy. Easy there.
Okay. Natalie's next idea. Not seeing Jupiter. Now, I know what this is. Jupiter, there was a few days ago, I totally feel this. A few days ago, right, there was the thing of like Jupiter was closest as it would ever be. And you could see, apparently with binoculars, you could see like its stripes and its rings and maybe even its moons. Like with binoculars, you could see it as a form, like it was that close in the sky, which is obviously like, I mean, literally a once in a lifetime event. Like it doesn't happen more than, I can't remember how much it was, but like, it literally doesn't happen more than once in your life. But like, and it's like, how could you ever, you kind of think broadly about your life. You're like, how could you ever miss that? And yet you just kind of do. Like I was here and I was like, oh, we should see it. I want to see it. And then it was a thing of like, it was like the most quotidian, boring shit of like, okay, but like, I'm with this person. They need food. We're going to go get food. And then like, oh, but we need to, like, the food place we want to go is closed. So we have to go home and make food. And then we're home. And then it's like, are we going to go out? And where would we go? It's like 12:30. We're all really tired. We're just going to go to sleep. And so you let these kind of like impossible moments kind of slip through your fingers. And there's definitely a real sadness to them. Maybe another kind of take on that, though, is that like, while it's sad, it's like, you know, oh, it's a once in a lifetime moment. Is this one of those things where it's like, okay, actually, like, once-in-a-lifetime moments do happen all the time, right? Like, it's similar to, like, when people are like, this is a historic event. This is the first time a female singer has ever charted with two different, like, duets on the top 400 in, like, R&B and pop simultaneously. Like the thing of records are just, like, so specific, and you're like, oh, my God, this is once-in-a-lifetime. Jupiter's so close. But it's like, okay, once-in-a-lifetime, like, there's a million crazy things in space happen and you won't see all of them. And so it's kind of making peace with like, you won't get to all of them. But, you know, I want to console myself with that, but I am actually bummed that I didn't see Jupiter. And I wonder what Natalie's take is on it. I wonder if she'll be like, whatever, who cares? No, I don't think so. I think she's going to, I don't know. You know, there's a dramatic irony to this because I won't know. I'll know kind of when you guys know what Natalie's opinions are about not seeing Jupiter are. And you guys can fast forward and you can then, and maybe I'm totally wrong about what this is about what her take is. And then you'll be able to be like, look at him, this fool, you know, there's a real like kind of, well, I guess it's dramatic irony. And also like, you know, there's kind of an unknowability of,
okay, next up we have not seeing Jupiter. Well, this was this thing like a couple weeks ago. I'm like finding that I want to guess what Charlie's going to guess, but that's not the game. But Charlie will probably just get this one because he's very aware of like news, especially in like science world. I wonder if he would agree with that. But not seeing Jupiter is like there was a story that was like Jupiter is going to be closer than it's going to be for like 100 years, basically. So it's like if you're alive right now, like this is your shot, honestly, to like see Jupiter. And I don't think it was 100. I think it was kind of like 50. And I remember thinking like, first of all, I might be alive. Like, don't talk to me like that. But I don't know. Anyways, I like read it. It was like nighttime and I was in my room and I was about to go to sleep. And I was like, should I go up to the roof and like see Jupiter really quick? And then I didn't. Oops. Okay, that's that one.
Dirt clean. Well, I have an idea about this, but I don't know if this is right. This is Natalie's idea, dirt clean. I have an idea about this. I don't know if it's right. It's basically like, my guess to this is that, like, you know how I'm reading it as like dust baths, right? Like, I mean, whatever, you remember learning where it's like, why are birds like rolling around in that? And like, that's actually how they get clean, right? And I mean, if that doesn't shake your idea of like what a baseline is or what cleanliness means, actually, this is such a big question. This is awesome that you brought this up. Like, okay, if birds can get clean with dirt, like, then what does cleanliness mean? Actually, there's a great New Yorker article that's about this, like, a few, it's like a book review, it's about a few books that are kind of like questioning this idea of cleanliness and questioning, like, you know, like the market history of the idea of cleanliness. Like, we're now so attached to, like, oh, you know, you have to be like clean, you have to like bathe, and, you know, as like capital kind of has accelerated, like the demands on like what cleanliness means have become more and more extreme, right? And things that like 100 years ago, or like, and actually cleanliness is like an idea not developed by advertising, but like the forms it take are like really influenced by advertising, right? It's like deodorant didn't exist before, right? Like 100 years ago. Obviously part of that is like, yeah, and people smelled really bad. People were just like, they smelled bad, and that's kind of what was happening. But there are some pieces of it where you're like, oh, actually like advertising created a need and now it exists, right? So there's an element of like, kind of wondering, sorry, I'm getting really tired. I'm gonna have a sip of my latte. There's an element of like, well, what are the baselines of cleanliness? Like, what are, and what cleanliness is actually like in line with what your body needs and wants, and what is like kind of constructed. And I bet you some of it is help. Like, I don't know, like the most extreme version this article was talking about was a guy who was like, I don't bathe. Or like, he like rinses off with water and he gets like dirt off his body, right? But he's like, actually your body is like, the more chemicals you put on it, the more like its own chemicals get out of whack. And like, you'd go through, once you stop bathing so rigorously, you go through like a period where you do smell actually really bad, and then your body kind of balances it out. And I'll say this, I did do this with shampoo. Like, I definitely for a year didn't shampoo, and my hair was exactly the same, didn't smell bad. And it was just like, because actually, I used to shampoo every single day when I was like a kid. I thought that was just like, I was told, I guess, that was just like part of showering, is like you have to, you know, shampoo every single day or every time you shower. And it definitely like stripped my hair of like a lot of natural oils and was not good for it. I think you probably should shampoo every once in a while, but it was interesting to me to be like, oh, I actually really don't need to do this. Like, it actually really does not make a difference to me. And whatever, I mean, you guys might be like, I bet you your hair did smell bad and you didn't know, but I actually really don't think it did. So that's kind of my challenge. This is maybe, I maybe need to like back off of this topic a little bit, because anyway, I have a lot to say about cleanliness. I'm finding generally right now, and I wonder if you guys are having the same experience with the way I'm talking and stuff, where like I feel like I'm having a harder time like finding kind of coherence. And I think what it is that when you're talking with someone, like when you kind of lose it, you have a break from talking. Like, and Natalie and I think are good at like taking over and scooping up the conversation when someone else like loses the thread. And being here alone, it's like, oh, I'm noticing all the ways that I'm like losing the thread, right? Like, or like I'm forgetting what to say, or I'm losing, right? There you go. I wanted to say more about like cleanliness though, but I think I will always want to say more about cleanliness.
Dirt clean is the idea that like dirt, if you need to get clean, like I'm always thinking about being clean as like other people's germs, you need to get clean of that. And also like toxic stuff you need to get clean of. But in that line of thinking, like sometimes I'm thinking about like when I'm a nanny and the kid's going to get dirty in like the ground, it's like, well, that dirt is bad because there's like lead in it or whatever the fuck. Ugh, fuck. I sound like a conspiracy theorist. No, I'm pretty sure there's like, is there lead in dirt, NYC? Or like mercury. I know because I was on the playground once. I think I said this on the podcast. Urban soils may contain detectable levels of lead. Not mercury. Well, mercury is naturally in soil. I'm seriously, I might cut this part because, like, I sound like so fucking stupid. But this is going to be an interesting test of, like, me not wanting to sound stupid versus me being lazy and not wanting to edit it out. Like, those are basically going to be the warring parts of me, like my laziness versus my like ego, essentially. So if you guys hear this in the podcast, you'll know which one won. And if you don't hear it, I'm not gonna listen to it again. So no one's ever gonna know about this. So, oh, hello, hello, hello. Anyways, basically just the idea that like when you get your hands dirty with like dirt, that dirt is like actually kind of clean, right? Like it's just dirt. Like nothing happened. Like you could do like a dirt like face mask, right? Or like a dirt like hand scrub. It's not like bad or dangerous. It does not have germs. I mean, there's like worms in it, but like, shouldn't you be like having some like worm in your like life to like? This is so scary. Like, is this what I would say if I was alone? Basically saying like you're supposed to have some like dirt in your life. And mud and dirt, literally the ground is not dirty, right? Like shit is dirty because it could get you sick. And like chemicals are dirty because they are dangerous for you. But like the dirt, like isn't that not dirty? It's just dirt. Okay. Maybe you guys already know this. This is obvious. Like I guess it's like physically like it looks dirty. So it's like in the aesthetic sense, it's like your shirt got dirty from dirt. But I guess I'm talking more about like hands. Like if you were in the dirt, you could really just wipe your hands off. No, you can wash them. Oh boy. I wonder if you guys are going to hear this part or if I'll take it out. Okie dokie.
What happened? Huge question. I mean, period. She's right. What happened is a huge question, right? Like, I was thinking about this in terms of another related topic, which is like when people ask you to like summarize something, or people are like, how was your trip? Like anything kind of in that world is like so kind of huge, and it's asking you to like summarize and distill a really complex experience into a digestible anecdote. I'm trying to write stand-up about it, and I've been, like, not so successful in it. But, like, there's just such a thing of, like, you know, experience is so complicated. And even when you're, like, there and doing something, it's hard to understand it. And then the additional lift of having to distill and explain it. And it can be even really small experiences. Like, it's like you get drinks with somebody, and then you go back home and somebody else is like, how was drinks? And you're like, it was nice. But actually, like, while that was happening, it's like you engage with someone else and you had to tell, like, you know, you had to do some at drinks, you had to do some narrative of your life, right? And like that made you feel a certain way, and you were worried that the person was like responding to that narrative in a certain way. You guys have an interesting relationship, which has like all this history, and like that is also playing in the moment or playing in this experience of getting drinks. And then to have to translate that, it's like you actually can't fully translate that unless you know not only were you there, but also know the entire history and context of a relationship, right? Like, so it does feel like there's kind of this like fool's errand element of like trying to explain anything like that, well, I guess this is like, right, language is imperfect, like tough, bitch, like just fucking deal with it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's going to be hard for you to like perfectly explain everything. And that's like why we endeavor to do it. Or like, right, you're never going to achieve like perfect communication. That's like relax about that. Maybe going back to Natalie's specific question, which is what happened? Or just like her specific thing, which is what happened? Huge question. That brings this other thing of like, it's like, wow, like when something happens, it's like, what did happen, right? Like, and that actually like involves, again, so many different moments. And it's even beyond like, oh, it's more stuff than you can ever possibly explain. It's actually also more stuff than you could ever possibly know, right? Like, oh, I was walking home and like there was a minor car accident, right? Say you see like a minor car accident on your walk home someone hears the sirens and is like, oh, wait, what happened? Like, or you post like, oh, I had a crazy thing. Someone's like, oh, what happened? You're like, there was a minor car accident. And that's like a true way of explaining it. But that's full of so much information that like the choice of what you pull out of it is like, you know, you're transmitting a reality and it's always going to be incomplete. And you have so much control and agency over like how you transmit that reality, which is kind of scary, I guess. But actually, you know what? It's also not that scary. But it is, if you think about it, weird. I think that the time I feel the pressure of it most is like when you're conveying an important experience to a loved one, right? Like the thing of like when you go on a trip and it's like something other than just like purely easy to explain. Like, you know, often trip, like you can go on a trip and you're like, you go on a little weekend trip to a cabin and you're like, it was really nice. Like I just went, it was nice. But even within that, you're like, okay, but like I was there with this person and like we had this kind of dynamic and it made us think about our relationship in this way. You guys get it.
This is, okay, this one's what happened. Huge question. Like, and I now I'm thinking that I already told this to Charlie. Shit. Whatever. Maybe I told it to you guys too, but this one is that, the kid I nanny is really, she's three and she's really into asking what happened. Like, if something bad happens, not even like actually bad, but like, you know, if someone drops something or like if someone trips or if she, like her balloon floated away the other week, floated. And, a million times. She was like, what happened? What happened? What happened? We have to like tell the story of what happened. And it's like, I think it's just like normal for that age. But it's also funny because like sometimes it's a really big question. Like sometimes it's like something that's like a pretty big like gray area will have happened. Like maybe like I drop something as she's reaching for something and then we like bump heads and the bottle of like her water bottle spills. Like sometimes it's like too many things and she'll say like, what happened? And I'm like, you know what? It's pretty complicated. Like, and if I'm telling you the story of it, like I'm going to flatten it. You know what I mean? Like, and sometimes it's like a kid like wants to hear the story like that of something scary to like and like may have it make sense, you know what I mean? Like, oh, like, you know, you fell and you got a boo-boo and then you felt better and whatever. And like that stuff I get, but like sometimes the what happened is like it's too, I'm like, you know what? Like there's a million sides to this story. We could tell it 100 different ways, and I don't really know where to start, quite frankly. I don't know how to get into it. And there's like my version of the truth and there's your version of the truth and there's so much in there. So sometimes I don't really feel so like equipped to answer it. And sometimes it's like I did something wrong. You know what I mean? Like I like forgot her coat or something. I'm sorry I'm yawning, but I love you guys. And it's not about you guys. Obviously, you're not even here. And it's not about Charlie. He's not even here. If it's about anyone, it's about me. And I could take offense to that, but I'm not going to because I don't know. I just don't think it's a good idea to take that personally. You know, the idea of like, there's no boring people. Wait, no. Boring people can't be bored or whatever. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? Wait. Boring people. Only boring people get bored. It's like, no. There are no boring people, first of all. There's just vibes. And some people vibe with some people. And some people vibe with other people. And if you are put next to someone who's not the vibe that you like that much, you can maybe be bored or you'll maybe be scared. And first of all, which one's better? I don't know. But second of all, you know, you can't just being inherently boring. No, I don't believe in it. And also being bored is like actually a really beautiful experience because it's like, you're like, oh my God, I'm bored. Like that's, then I can fill my, then I can know what I want, which is like stuff to happen to me and to be done and for me to do stuff. And the first step in that is recognizing that you're bored. So that's fair. You know what I mean? I'm bored. Sometimes I do get bored and then I go, whoa, okay, I need to do stuff. I'm not sure what I'm saying. Anyway, so that's what happened, that it's just like, it's too big of a question. And then when it's the thing that's my fault, I'm like telling the story in a way that's like true, but like has my like excuses built in. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, well, I forgot your jacket. Oh, well, you know, I think I was distracted. Like, I'm like doing like a whole excuses thing. It's like, shut up. What are you talking about?
Well, that's kind of the end of my portion of it. I wonder, I really, really do wonder how this is going to work. I've said this a million times, but one of the things that, this is one of my big ideas, is like people talk about like taking risks, and like to be successful, you have to take risks. And I think there's not so much conversation about how you can take a risk and it won't work. Or sometimes it cannot work. And that actually is not like, it's not like, oh, it didn't work, but it was still good. It's like, no, it didn't work and that was bad. Like, it actually did set you back. But this felt like a risk. And we'll see. We'll see if it works. I mean, I'm excited and I'm curious. And you never miss, you miss every shot. All right. Love you guys. I'm excited to, next week we'll be back in the studio recording together. And if you didn't like this one, no problem. Sorry the sound was not as good. We're not on our usual equipment. If you didn't like it, no problem. We'll get you on the next one. No worries. Love you guys.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
Hey there, podcast listener. Good news. We're doing another HeadGum Happy Hour in New York City.
Whoa, that's amazing news. Amir, why don't you tell the folks when and where it is?
Okay, fine. It's Tuesday, May 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Bell House.
Okay, and why don't you tell everybody who the fucking hosts are?
Yeah, that would be us. It would be, we're hosting it. It's Jake and Amir.
Okay, and how about this, you little piece of shit? Why don't you tell everybody who is going to be performing? Who is this show featuring?
All right, I don't appreciate being called that, but it is featuring Charlie Bardet, Natalie Rotter-Laitman of Exploration
Live. And why don't you tell them, excuse me, why don't you tell them who else it's featuring?
Yeah, Millie Tamaras and Elise Morales of the Go Touch Grass podcast, and
some surprise guests as well.
More, yes.
And Mir, why don't you go ahead and close this out now? You say something like, thanks for listening, we'll see you at the show, or something like that. Why don't you go ahead and do that?
I will.
Can you do that?
So go buy a ticket at headgum.com/live, and we'll see you there.
All right, bye.